Alô? Mark Rupin.
Here.
John O'Hare.
Here.
Kimberly Swanberg.
Here.
Charlton Farron.
Here.
Dave Samer.
Here.
Terry Train. Angel Osoma.
A quorum.
Quorum.
I will entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So
we'll do that though. Are there any? Go ahead. Motion, is there a second?
I second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, Lisa, would you please call the vote?
Mark Rupin?
Aye.
John O'Hare?
Aye.
Kimberly Swanberg?
Aye.
Charlton Farron?
Aye.
Dave Samer?
Aye.
Terry Train is absent. And Angel Osomala?
Aye.
And passes. Thank you all. Okay, the next item on our agenda is Champlain Investment Partners. Let's see, Gwen and Craig, one or the other, are you going to introduce Champlain?
Yeah, so we can do a quick intro. I think I see Meg is on from Champlain, and then Judy. So, you know, you all at the last meeting, we had brought you up to date on some of the organizational changes that they had had. You know, before making any further decisions, you decided you wanted to hear from them directly. So they're going to give you an update on what's going on with the firm, a brief portfolio update as well, I believe. But I think you all kind of know, you know, have an idea of what's happening. So I'll turn it over to them unless there are any questions for us on that matter.
So take it away, please.
You're on mute, Judy.
Good morning. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, why don't I start off and then I'll hand it over to Scott. First of all, I just want to share with you that we're very grateful for the 15-year partnership we've had with your organization and really appreciate you making the time today to hear from Scott and myself regarding our recent organizational changes, recent performance returns, and how we're positioned going forward. You know, as we share with all clients, and I think some of you were at the meeting when you first became a client, that our investment process is our most valuable player, and we're very focused on three goals. The first goal is to make money. The second goal is to manage risk. And the third goal is to be consistent. And that last goal of being consistent causes our investment process to be out of favor at times. So as I know that we've shared with you over the past few years, that since 2022, we've had substantial headwinds to our investment process. However, within the firm, we're always talking about, you know, we can't control the overall market. What we can control, we need to focus on what we can control. And when we reflected on that, we felt that we could have made better decisions in the execution of the investment process. So as you may recall, in 2022, we moved to a co-deputy CIO role. And in hindsight, we didn't think that co-deputy CIO model was as effective as it could have been. So we made that decision in late fourth quarter to move to a single deputy CIO role. And we eliminated Corey Bronner's position as part of that. Scott will jump more into that, but at the same time, we also made the decision to streamline the overall organization. As you may recall, over the last 4 years, we've invested substantially into our enterprise data platform. And oftentimes, for those of you who have been through transformational technology implementations, you often need more resources as you're going through that, and different types of resources. So we actually brought on two data engineers in 24 and 25. We haven't historically had data engineers at the firm. And really at the end of 24 and certainly all of 25, we began to very much reap the benefit of this enterprise data platform. So that led us to the decision to really right-size the organization moving forward on the business side. So I'm happy to answer any questions on that. I know when there's a period of underperformance, the last thing you want to hear is organizational changes. So I appreciate, you know, how frustrating that can be. However, you know, Scott and I are very aligned that we have to make the tough decisions and focus on what we can control. So that's what we did.
So how long has Champlain been with the city of Tucson? How many years?
Since 2010.
Okay, I think I was on the board back then also, and there were some problems then also.
Well, we were in a very similar position back then. I recall the conversation, and we were lagging mightily, just like we are now. And I remember having the conversation about through the full cycle, you'll see us more than make up for the lag. And that's historically how this process has operated. And I'm very confident we're going to see that happen again, because right now, everybody's leaning in the same direction. They're all on this one idea of a CapEx trade for AI. And any normalization, any cooling off of the fever, you're going to see our portfolio come roaring back, because we own really good businesses.
But there still isn't any guarantee during this period that things are going to work out for you. So that we're in a very risky area here.
Also. Well, for sure. None of us here at Champlain, including myself, can make you any promises or guarantees. If you were to look and unpack the characteristics of the portfolio, you would see that we own an exceptionally high-quality set of companies. They're earning much higher rates of return than the typical business, with a lot less capital being utilized. So they're very efficient, and they're growing faster. And they might be slightly more expensive on a free cash flow yield basis, but we're also at a very strong economic point in the economic cycle. So in a weaker period of the economy, you'll see our earnings and cash flow hold up a lot better than the average company, and will probably look less expensive than the benchmark at some point if there's ever a slowdown in the economy. And to be clear, we don't need the economy to slow down. We don't need a recession for this process to come back in favor and shine mightily. It's just a rotation away from this fever around the CapEx cycle for AI, coming back to the very consistent, reliable, dependable businesses that we own.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a few questions too?
Well, here's what I'd like to do. I want to give Champlain an opportunity to at least state their case, and then let's do it. Otherwise, I'm concerned that we're not giving. I want to give from Champlain. So can we wait a few minutes?
Absolutely.
Is that okay, Armin?
Yes.
Well, you've heard the concerns from one of our board members, and I think it's a concern that at varying degrees everybody's got. So give us some more detail, and then we'll start doing some questions. Just I want the questions to become the dominant part of the presentation. So go ahead.
What exactly, can you help me out, please? And would you like more detail around either the decision on the CIO office or more details around the portfolio?
Let's acknowledge that the chair's wrong. Tarleton, why don't you ask your questions? We'll do it that way. That'll help flesh out what the concerns are.
Yeah, so I guess my first question is, and first off, just really glad to see you all joining us, and thank you for your time and recognize kind of your leadership at your company. This is kind of a non-trivial group of people from you guys, so thank you for that. This is the first time your firm has experienced a sustained compression in assets under management at the scale that you're experiencing right now. How did that impact you operationally and strategically, and how are you stabilizing that and turning that challenge into an opportunity?
Sure. I'm happy to jump in here. We actually, you know, in 10 years ago, we, in 2015, we entered into a revenue share, and at that time, our assets under management were $6 billion. So, and what we did with the revenue share is we had a number of partners that were getting to kind of a retirement situation, and we also, as founders, wanted to de-risk a bit. And so that revenue share ended in June of this past year. So from a business profitability standpoint, although we've had a decline in assets under management this past few years, we also had a revenue share roll off, and that was a low teen percentage of revenue, which is obviously a much higher percentage of net income. So we've always been very conservative as an organization. We have no debt. We're privately held. Partners and former partners have equity in the firm, and we have always had the mindset not to have partners that became partners take on any debt to buy equity. So we've always granted equity to our employees. So from an overall health of the business, we're very comfortable with the level of assets that we're at, or if they go lower. We've also, as you know, been very focused on making sure our partners understand how we manage assets. So you'll never see Scott or other members of the investment team on CNBC. We do no direct retail marketing. And so that's led to a very stable client base over time. So despite, you know, assets going down, in many cases, those have been reallocations of, you know, asset allocators, whether it's, you know, a Raymond James or Wells Fargo, where we're part of their models. And so we would imagine when small cap in our process becomes back in favor, that those assets will be reallocated back. So from a business standpoint, we're very comfortable. And, you know, as I mentioned with this enterprise data platform, we invested substantially over the last few years to create more efficiency in the organization.
Thank you. The 2022 cycle is kind of a cruel market cycle on multiple levels. It sounds kind of like you feel like it wasn't a typical market downturn that we've seen in the past. I guess, like, what makes your position now strong moving forward, and why will the next potential downturn be different than what we saw in 2022, in your opinion? Like, do you feel like your setup has any extra risk for kind of untraditional downturns, if you will?
Well, there's a lot there, and I don't know. If I don't get to all of that, please wake me up or redirect me, but I don't know if I ever said this in front of the board, but back in the day, this is early days of Champlain, I used to say to people in council, if you ever had student loan jubilee, we were going to underperform mightily, because if you had this cohort of young people that no longer had a student loan, they'd be out buying homes and RTVs and all kinds of toys and we'd have an economy that was on fire, and the discretionary consumer space would be on fire, and our process would lag mightily. And you know, I was seen in those early days of talking about that student loan jubilee like I was from another country or something. No one ever imagined that. And I always think it'd be $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion. Well, with COVID, we ended up having $7-8 trillion of stimulus injected into the economy in the form of checks, free checks in the mail, all kinds of aid. And then subsequently, the next administration, President Trump's administration 2.0, another trillions of dollars of deficit spending. So we have been injecting money into the economy at a pace that even if it just stays the same, your year-over-year growth is going to start to slow down. And I would argue we're at a point where they're not going to be able to grow the amount of deficit spending. And if it shrinks or just stays the same, that's an environment where we're going to come roaring back, because in a flat to slower growth environment, our companies will look very good on a relative basis. Right now, everybody's been chasing that which has been getting all the juice, all the stimulus, and it's unsustainable. But another key idea is that they're all leaning to the same side of the boat. So we just need some defectors, and this will start to normalize. But we, you know, our process has been getting very good affirmation recently. We had Abbott come and buy our Cologuard test company, Exact Sciences. We had Boston Scientific come and buy Penumbra. So we're getting affirmation that we own really good franchises. Very, very solid strategics are coming in to take our companies away. And I think there's more of that. And our discount to fair value, which these acquisitions affirm our valuation work, is very strong. Our discount to fair value is very, very significant right now. We're in the mid-20s, and historically, and it hasn't happened since 22, we've been in a perpetual discount here. But the point being, the strategics are taking us out at big premiums, so I think our fair value work is good.
And I'm not sure if anyone has the presentation, but the page that Scott's referring to is page 17, where we show the discount to the fair value of our process versus, whoops, okay.
And yeah. And so I'm very confident we all like to be very well exposed to our strategies and put all the new money we can into it when we're in this green zone, because historically, it's been buy time when we're in the green zone. And you can see our process has been out of favor since 22. We just haven't had a big surge in valuation. So a slight bit there in late 23, but lots of opportunity. And then I don't know what the next downturn looks like. And that's the thing. No one ever knows. No one can predict it. But when you see the way the table is set with valuations back to like the big tech bubble type level, when you see cash levels, record low cash levels, sentiment quite high, insider selling dwarfing insider buying, you don't know what the catalyst is going to be, but it suggests that forward returns are going to be difficult, that we're going to see something that causes the fever to break, so to speak. And that's an environment where Champlain has historically done very well on a relative basis. So I think the setup is wonderful. And we don't need a recession. If we had a recession, we'd outperform unbelievably well, because our companies are not highly cyclical. We just never own highly cyclical businesses. But we don't need a recession, just normal environment. Judy, could you swing us back to the rolling relative returns, please? Thank you. So this is our rolling relative returns. And you can see when we're stinking up the barn like we have been recently here in the bottom quarter of the chart. But there have been plenty of periods where we've had strong nominal returns in the market, and Champlain's added significant value. That's all we need. And if we do get into an adverse environment, we should add tremendous value. And one key idea I want to share with you, which has been axiomatic my entire career, is this too will pass. The idea of mean reversion. So when we were on the far right-hand side of the cloud in the second quarter of 21 and fourth quarter of 21, if we didn't
It might be helpful to just explain the chart so that everyone.
Sure. Thanks, Judy. So the benchmark's absolute return on an average basis is on the horizontal axis, and Champlain's excess return or deficit is on the vertical axis. So back in 21, fourth quarter of 21, the benchmark had averaged 23% a year for 3 years, and Champlain had added an additional 400 basis points per year to that number. We were in such favor. It was an anomaly. And if, forgive us or pardon us if we didn't warn that we were probably likely to give back, mean revert or move to the other side. Now, the way mean reversion often works is, and this is one of Bob Farrell's rules. He used to be a strategist at Merrill Lynch back when I started my career, is that when you mean revert, you typically go through the mean to the other side. And that's what you've seen Champlain do. We've gone to the other side of the cloud of dots here. And that's why you're frustrated. And we are too, because there have been some, we haven't been perfect in the execution of our process, but the majority of this deficit where we sit today is process related, but we've made some changes because we think we could have done a bit better. And we're all about continuous improvement, but we will be back to the other side of the cloud of dots. We're not changing our spots. We haven't done anything to the process. We've adjusted some members of the team and how we execute. Go ahead, Greg.
So, thanks, Scott. One of the comments that you just made, I think, from my seat, concerns me a little bit more than necessarily being out of favor. You know, you just said that the process didn't work. You know, I think that led to the departure of Corey. So can we maybe unpack that a little bit more? Can you maybe talk to where the process didn't work, maybe why it didn't work, and sure. What you all had done to put, I'll say, changes or safeguards in place so that you don't have those issues again, maybe outside of just moving to a singular deputy CIO?
Sure. And if I may have misspoke if I said the process didn't work. The process, we think our process is our most valuable player. We have not changed anything with our process. It's how we execute the process. And Corey had a lot of gifts, not the least of which was a very effective communicator with clients. But he had some tendencies that were that undermined his gifts. And a couple of those were he was too patient with situations that were struggling or out of favor, always waiting for a catalyst to maybe get a better opportunity to exit. The other tendency was to try to get every squeeze out of the lemon he could and not declare victory and bank the big win. So we gave back some big wins in stocks like Advanced Auto and dug some big holes with a company like Leslie's. And, you know, we had conversations over the years. And in the summer of 23, I spoke to the team at our firm-wide sector review, and I said, we're destroying too much capital. We need to get back to protecting capital. And as we got to the end of last year, looking at results, talking about annual reviews and compensation and what have you, you know, Corey's batting average and the amount of capital destruction in consumer staples in particular was unacceptable. And we decided to simplify the deputy the CIO office to one deputy CIO. And Joe and I are like-minded on how we make decisions around weak fundamentals, thesis drift, and banking big wins. So I think we're making much better decisions, and we're much crisper, and we'll see. We just can't undermine the process. So the process is fine. We can't undermine the process, and I'm confident Joe and I are going to get the most out of the process.
So I appreciate that. I think my question, though, still based on your comments, is how was that allowed to happen and persist for as long as it did to get to the point where it was?
That's something that weighs on me, because as team leader, that's on me. That's my bad, and it's one of those. It's a balance between overrunning somebody or giving them the benefit of the doubt. And with hindsight, too often I gave Corey the benefit of the doubt. Had I taken a firmer stance with some of these debates, I might have undermined his confidence, undermined his enthusiasm for being part of the team. So I didn't manage it well, but that doesn't mean you don't. When the scorecard develops the evidence that the debates are going the wrong way, and we always think of things in terms of three-year increments ourselves. That's why we do this three-year rolling relative return chart. That we, from the summer of 23 to the end of 25, that wasn't even 3 years. But so I own that dysfunction on not managing the CIO office correctly. We've cleaned that up.
Well, and also, I think, you know, when you're having those debates, you know, just like when you're buying a stock, there's a lot of reasons why you shouldn't own a stock. And, you know, there's a lot of decisions. So I think, you know, you kind of have to look over time and see a pattern. And I think, you know, for sure it was the investment process that was out of favor. But when we did a deep dive into over time our execution on the margin, we thought we could have done better, particularly in consumer, which Corey had a big hand in.
Dovetailing all of that, can I interject with a question, Mr. Chair, or Kurt?
Sure. Go ahead.
Would you say you have, what does your process look like in terms of like independent challenge when you're making investment decisions? Like how does that typically look like in your firm?
We bring all new ideas to the entire team, and that's why we believe making key people on the team, the senior members of the team partners, we want them to come to the team meetings, not just worried about their sector. We want them coming to the team meeting worried about everything, worried about the entire portfolio and also compliance and client relationships and all that. So making folks an owner-operator, we believe, creates focus and intensity and good Socratic debate in the team meetings when we talk about new ideas, as well as every morning when we talk or we unpack earnings reports and things like that. So one of the key pieces of technology we use to foster this debate is a book called The Four Agreements by Miguel Ruiz. And just briefly, if we want to keep our words impeccable, but we also know we can't take things personally. So we encourage debate. Judy and I are always asking the members of the firm, please tell us what you think we need to hear, not what we want to hear. And the way you become a partner at Champlain is having that ability to speak up and challenge the consensus, challenge the mindset. And so we've done all we can to foster open debate, good Socratic debate. But there are, particularly when you elevate somebody to a deputy CIO role, there's been a track record that you believe in, that you're confident in, and if that starts to erode, it's it's, you know, probably gave it too much time. You never would have seen it had we been in the mode where our process was in favor, though. It would have been hidden. It's only the acuteness of the process being out of favor that really kind of exposes this and challenges us to make the adjustment that we made.
All right. More questions? Comments?
No. Just thank you for the discussion. It was valuable.
Yeah. It, all a reminder that this is not easy stuff. It's just not. And, managing people and managing decision-making processes is, and I'll just make this observation. I was taken, Scott, by your comment about, concerns about confidence for your, deputy, CIO. There's also always the countervailing, side. So we're not thrilled with how things are going. What happens if we stop? Are we walking into something that might be worse? And that's easily forgotten in decision making. And so I don't envy you your challenges at all. I don't. But obviously we have duties and responsibilities as well.
Right. And we've been through the toughest challenge. Right now we know this process will out its goodness in due time. And we're trying our best to be good communicators with our clients to make sure that they understand or appreciate how this will mean revert at some point. And if you want to replace us, we would highly encourage you to consider somebody very similar to us, because our bias for very reliable, dependable, high quality companies, which is evidenced, if you can please turn to slide 16, Judy, it's evidenced by this goodness here. So we have really worked hard the past couple of years to build into this strategy, this bias for high returns with low asset intensity. That's how you get that gross profitability metric. And if there were one characteristic that I could take to build the portfolio around, it would be that gross profitability, that gray line. But in addition to being more profitable with less asset intensity, we're also growing at 400 basis points faster than the benchmark. Just compound that advantage on growth with that advantage on returns, it just keeps adding up and compounding. And that's where time will cure all this for us, because that is a fabulous recipe for long-term success. We just need to let it bake and not interfere with it with self-inflicted wounds. But I appreciate the tough job asset allocators like yourself have. Our job is relatively easier, frankly.
All right. Any other questions, comments?
Yes, I got a short comment here. I have been on the board off and on for probably 18 years, and I have been in this type of position before, and as Mark says, it's extremely hard because people have been with us for 10, 15 years, and that all these people are nice people and everything, and it is hard, but I think that over the time, and I think the mistakes that we have maid are letting these things go to the long hair, and it is a very risky situation, and that I am not willing to take the risk because that they were rarely work out well. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any more questions or comments?
All right. Appreciate your time. Thank Appreciate you. The questions. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Being here. And we will.
Yeah, thank you.
We will now have a discussion about how we're going to discuss these issues. So.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So thanks. We appreciate your time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Right. Craig, do you want to give us your sense of the situation? We value Callan, and we pay you to give us guidance. So, frankly, before anybody starts talking about what they think, I want to get on the table of people. For your view of the situation.
Yeah. So Corey was in to the retreat in October. I thought he told a pretty good story, explanation of why results looked how they did. The world has not necessarily meaningfully changed that would have impacted their strategy. So certainly understand where their strategy is. I think based on my questions, you probably took that our bigger concern is what appears to be a process issue. The discussion about the team dynamics. And while I respect wanting to build up your deputy CIO and give him confidence, it sounds like they were not aligned in terms of how they were managing and looking at investments. That's somewhat concerning. The comment that he made, and I actually wrote this down, that there wouldn't have been issues assuming that their process was in favor. Like, that to me sounded like a red flag. Like, if you have this process, it's supposed to work, but it only works when your style's in favor, not when you're out of favor, when one of the core tenets of what you do is protection of capital. Like that, those comments concerned me more than what I've seen from their results. So I didn't walk away from this conversation feeling great, about things. But, I think the comments they made about the style or portfolio are probably very valid. We would expect to see a turnaround, but I don't know that I think it's a little bit more than just performance right now.
Let me just comment on what you wrote down. I heard the same thing. I heard it as we saw this exposed to us because we're in a tougher period. I didn't necessarily take that to mean they would not have seen this, but for being in a tougher period. But clearly, that's an issue. The process needs to work in good times and bad times. But I didn't necessarily see it as I wouldn't have caught this in good times. I think it simply wouldn't have been as evident as quickly and as easily in better times than not. Are you, Craig, surprised by what appears to be a process miss from this group? Because my sense was that this is a group that people look at with a lot of favor in terms of how they operate their business.
My surprise? I mean, yeah, I think anytime you have a myth like this, it's a surprise.
No, we have a little heater in here.
alternate.
Something, when something like a deputy CIO doesn't work out, that's surprising. I mean, I think what's more surprising is the, what appears to be just a lack of investment oversight on the team. That's more surprising than anything else. I think, you know, with any organization, especially with a small organization, you know, their team and their process is kind of the hallmark of what they do. So such a big miss, I guess I would say, is pretty surprising.
Any questions, comments for Craig based on what he shared? Do you concur, Craig, I think you said yes, but I just want to be sure we're clear. Do you concur with the overall position that Champlain is suggesting, that, you know, whether we use Champlain or we don't, we should have this strategy in our mix and continue with this strategy even though it's out of favor right now?
Are you talking mid and small cap equity in general, or?
Yeah. We should have somebody doing what they're doing, whether it's them or not.
Yep. If you decide to move a different direction, we would suggest looking for a replacement. And really quick as an aside, Tarleton, thank you. We got a lot of calls after the last meeting based upon what got reported about searches. So yeah, I mean, we would suggest a replacement for this. Whether or not you decide to do just straight mid cap or you want to do SMID, that could complement the Fidelity portfolio as well, we could look at both of those, but, we would continue with an allocation in this space.
And are you suggesting that we ought to be looking for a replacement?
I mean, that's really the board's decision. I'd say I didn't walk away from this call with a lot of confidence. After our research team had met with them the first time, you know, the changes made sense. They seemed reasonable. Hearing it from them directly made me feel less confident than I felt coming into it.
Yeah. Others, what are your thoughts over, you know, the overall presentation, level of comfort, and the like? Kimberly?
Oh, thank you. I don't know. Over the presentation, it seemed kind of rough. Judy came across initially as, you know, very competent, and but really not discussing, you know, some of the key areas that led to, you know, some of the big changes in the firm. I'm almost like oblivious to, you know, speaking to that fact. And I think Craig really kind of pushed them to be able to speak about it more. I feel like the chair was trying to get us to maybe get more of an update, maybe to, you know, from them before we dove into questions. And some of the slides in the presentation, you know, it looks like, you know, there could be potentially, you know, other people in the same situation that have maybe moved away from them. And they said something like, you know, another area that they've always praised themselves in, and I could have gotten it wrong, but they just terminated it as a 6/30/25 was that sharing of the, some sort of share with the employees. Did I catch that correctly? They terminated that. So they, if that's correct, they terminated that. They got rid of 25% of their people. You know, the returns aren't what we like them to see. You know, based on some of the slides I was looking at, you know, when we got the packet and the email, as well as during the presentation, you know, there seems to be some definite points of concern. I felt, somebody said on the call that these people, everybody's nice, right? it's definitely tough. I didn't feel like Scott was that on, you know, as far as, you know, to really, like, make us feel really comfortable with this. And knowing that our, you know, in that one chart in the quadrants, knowing how it has not been looking favorable for a while, I mean, that's another thing. So, I mean, there's so many things, you know, you put them all into the basket. I mean, I would question the board, like, when you had other things like this, how many years did you wait? How many years do we wait? You know, what is the typical, what is the typical, you know, point that you look for something else? That's it.
And others?
I guess if I could speak, initially when we were talking about them, I feel like I was a little bit reflexive on, okay, well, they're performing bad, you know, in the short term, and they had a major structural thing. So I kind of had a reflexive feeling of like, well, maybe, you know, like if you're trying to hire someone and there's two things that are kind of a stretch for that person to do, that's like kind of a red flag, you know. I worry that we might be a little bit too reflexive and kind of short-term thinking if we just immediately release them, just because they have been out of favor. At the same time, I share a lot of the same concerns. I think your questions were and your comments, Craig, have been spot on it. This is a tough one for me. I don't have like a really clear way of landing on it. I kind of feel like, you know, in the materials from the board packet, you can see how much asset under management they lost in the last 3 years. And it's kind of predictable with their performance after 2022 and the kind of the lack of recovery after, and, you know, I wonder if maybe they scaled up too quickly and it was kind of like their strategy doesn't work as well if it's scaled up and maybe they've nimbled back down. But they weren't very convincing with, you know, they keep referring back to the process, like the process is going to be the holy grail, if you will. But, like, it does require the management oversight for any process to be effective. Right. And so I think that's kind of where our concern is right now, is the management, is the team working cohesively well? And is it going to spiral down where like things disintegrate worse over time, or are they going to stabilize and they actually are sitting on a lot of value. And if the market turns down, maybe they'll do, you know, they'll shine. I don't know. That's kind of where my thought space is right now.
Angel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. what stood out for me, among other thoughts, was when the gentleman said, if you wish to leave, look for XYZ. I think they did very little to prove to us that, hey, if you remain with us, here's our path forward, and we are confident of where we will be or where we can take you in the future. What I also heard was a lot of blame on the guy who is not sitting at the table with us. And it leads me to believe that there was failure, oversight, failure on the part of management on a whole, because you did not only eliminate you did not only terminate the individual, you eliminated the position. So how long did that position exist, and how well was that position performing for you until you got to this point? So to me, there is a lot more going on within the organization than meets the eye. And I would be very cautious if we should decide to continue with them.
Dave?
Yes, I kind of agree with what Angel said, where Scott seemed to accept responsibility for the overall organization, but only after he was spent a great deal of time blaming the people underneath him. And then I also agree with Tarleton. It's kind of a tough timing decision because you hate to sell at the bottom necessarily if things would be rebounding soon. But I do feel that moving on would be a good thing to look at.
Anybody else? I want to share from 40 years ago. I represented a regional brokerage, and I remember a case where we had some people who decided wholly inappropriately to invest in, commodities. And they had a matched account. They had two other accounts, and one account, of course, was up and the other was down, and they were in the brokerage every day ranting about why are we keeping the one that's down? And broker was not doing anything until the broker decided, I'm tired of these people. And he wrote him a letter and said, I'm tired of these people, but I'm going to do what you want because I'm tired of hearing from you. And, of course, within a month, the two accounts had flipped in positions, and then they were mad that he did what people didn't want to do, and they sued. So I understand the case for being counter to or contra to, you know, what's clearly driving the market these days, which is, you know, this AI thing and so on. So, but I also have a sense that we can replace Champlain with a similar investment strategy that will have some friction, some costs associated with what we do, and much more liquid here than we are in, when we're dealing with Chase in the real estate sector, but it's still not, I don't think, Craig, we can't look and say we're out here on it tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a separate account, and so this money could go anywhere easily in kind. I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I didn't hear that.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, you know, so I don't think this is necessarily a decision that it's really about Champlain. But, if we decide to get rid of Champlain, I think we have to have a substitute, and that's going to take us some period of time. I'm going to say one other thing, and that is, we've been with these people for 15 years, and I gather we've had overall relatively good experiences with them. It looks like there was a miss. None of us are perfect. I was not wild about the presentation today, particularly from Scott, but I also know that we're not hiring a group because they present well. We're hiring a group because they manage our money well. And I've been in plenty of settings in courtrooms where I brought my argument and I'll immediately confront it with questions, and it can be somewhat discombobulating. Kind of tried to throw a rope. It didn't do very well, but I tried to see if we could get, back to a somewhat more focused presentation. So I just put out there, if the group's will is to change, I understand. I am probably a slower goer than perhaps what I'm hearing from some. And that's just concern about moving too quickly. Having said that, does anything that I've said or anybody else has said support more discussion, more questions, more comments? I don't think we need, and Cassie, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't need a board resolution to ask Callan to round up some other suspects for us to chat with, do we?
No, would just be an instruction in the meeting.
Okay, so I guess let's then do a let's then do a straw poll with those who feel like we ought to be looking elsewhere and want Callan to get started on that in the near future. Raise your hand or turn on your little gold raised hand and we'll do a count. If you feel like the thing you would put up if you were going to ask a question. So we know who's saying arguing, Callan moving in now. Is that nobody? Oh, Dave? Okay. John, you're in favor of looking?
Thank you. I think that the sooner the better that we start looking, the better off.
Okay, so I see Dave, John, Carl, did you say you two?
I'm not opposed. I'm not opposed to looking, yeah.
Okay. Well, you in favor of looking?
I guess I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I'm seeing a majority that are in favor of looking. So, Craig, can you get the process started?
Yes, we can get the process started. Our next typical meeting, when we would do kind of our full bore review and everything, where we might do this, would be May. Does that work? Would you all want to see something a little bit sooner, or do you want to even see something later? Because that could be a happy meeting as well, if you just wanted it pushed down the road a little bit further. Let me know.
May sounds fine. If somebody disagrees, let me know. Dave,
I agree. I don't think there's a big rush. I think we should look at options, but it's not an urgent matter to have done in the next month or two.
And Craig, I guess if you pick up any either information or any sense that, there's either something else. I'm still sitting here kind of sort of troubled by how a group that we've been with for 15 years just kind of missed. And I think the miss is real, but, so if you pick up any other insights, pass them along.
As we've been chatting here, as you all have been chatting here, I've been, shooting some notes back and forth with the analyst that covers them pretty directly. And some of my comments to her based on what we heard today are prompting her to have further conversations. So we'll pass along anything new and additional that we hear.
I'm not picking up from anybody a sense that if we had information that suggested that this was just an off-day presentation and there's maybe more going on, that minds are closed right now. But I certainly respect the consensus that we ought to be taking a look. Hey, Craig, you got really hazy. Is there something? You look like you got a film over your camera.
Yeah, no, I have a window that's pretty high up that doesn't have anything covered. Okay. If you catch me at the right time of the year at exactly the right hours, it wreaks havoc with this. So.
Thinking of my eye surgery last year.
Nope. It's nice.
cleaned them up really well. Okay. So I think we're done with that topic now, I think. Anything else about that? Okay. Let me just find my agenda here. Here we go.
Actually, Mark, Mr. Chair,
real
quick, I would say if any of you have any specific managers or strategies that you might want us to look at through the process, actually, maybe let me do a very quick overview of how we do our process, just because I think it's the first time most of you have been through this. We actually start from the ground up, so we don't have account, we don't have buy lists, we don't have recommended lists, anything like that. So we actually will start, what we do is we fill out a profile that talks about the plan, the portfolio, what we want it to fit, where we want it to fit, and how we want it to fit. And then our group builds a list from the ground up. we generally get to a list of probably about 10 to 15 names that we'll discuss with our research analysts. We'll work on narrowing that down, and then we take it to what's called our manager search committee, and they ultimately approve the candidates that come forward to you all. And so we are able to really look at, you know, pretty much any strategy that you might want to. We obviously cover a lot of managers, a lot of mandates. But if there's somebody that you think might fit in this space, you know, we're certainly happy to entertain that through the process. So.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Helen, are you ready to give us our performance review for Q4 and following?
We are. So I've got Gwen with me here today. So we're getting to, I guess, what I'll call the mundane stuff, markets, performance. We've got some asset allocation work that we had done. And then I think it had come up, it might have been the October meeting, but I think it was Tarleton who had asked that we take a look at fees and how fees look relative to peer groups. And so we also do have a fee analysis as well to go through. So
actually on that note, Craig, and it'll come up when we look at that, but that is one thing, is Champlain does have a relatively high fee for their peer groups. Okay. Anyway, that's
they do. We noticed that as well when we went through this. And so certainly on top of the performance and organizational challenges, it's just another headwind for them. But yeah. So I'm gonna let Gwen get started with the market.
Yes, good morning, everyone. So, yeah, as Craig mentioned, I'm going to start by going over the market and economic update for the fourth quarter. Starting off with the U.S. economy, overall, things looked okay. We did see a little bit of slowdown in the labor markets over the fourth quarter. So the unemployment rate declined to 4.4% after reaching a high of 4.5% in November, which is the highest it's been since October of 2021. But the real slowdown that we saw was actually in the number of jobs added. So from April, there was only about 100,000 jobs added. And typically, month over month, we'll see on average anywhere from 100 to 200,000 jobs added. So that was a pretty drastic slowdown. GDP, we actually have updated numbers for this. The fourth quarter numbers came out. GDP came in at 1.4% for the fourth quarter. So also quite a bit of cooling compared to the third quarter GDP of 4.4%. Inflation came in at about 2.7% year over year in December, so still above the Fed's 2% target. The Fed did cut rates three times, once in September, once in October, and once in December, bringing the new target rate of 3.5 to 3.75%. What really sparked the Fed to cut rates was due to the slowdown in labor markets that we saw. The Fed has a dual mandate of balancing both inflation as well as labor markets. So that was enough for them to cut rates.
Okay. I just wanted to make one real quick comment on the GDP number. It feels like a long time ago, but if you do remember back to Q4, we did have the longest government shutdown. And so the government closing, less government spending, did take a pretty significant chunk off of GDP. The consumer has continued to remain extremely strong and resilient. So despite all the news, all the confusion, everything that's out there, the consumer has still really continued to prop up what we've seen from economic growth and GDP.
Yes, thank you for adding that. Looking at the Treasury yield curve at the bottom of the page here, the orange line represents the end of December, and then the green dotted line represents the end of the third quarter. You can see that rates fell at the short end of the curve. That was due to the Fed cutting rates. And then on the long end of the curve, we can see that rates rose, and that was just really due to upward pressure there regarding concerns related to the fiscal deficit. And we can go to the next slide now, please. Moving on to overall market performance now, I would say the biggest theme that we saw over the last quarter and the last year was that non-U.S. equities outperformed U.S. equities, which is something different than what we've experienced in previous years. Looking at the U.S. equity portion of the table, large cap stocks outperformed small cap stocks. within non-U.S. equities over the last year, we saw about a 34% return coming out of emerging markets. And then within fixed income, looking at the Bloomberg aggregate, you know, a 7.3% return over the year. One number to highlight on this table is the gold spot price, the one-year return of about 64%, which is quite high. A lot of the things that we were seeing over the last year was, you know, gold is considered a safe haven asset, and investors were kind of concerned about what was going on because I feel like there's a lot of news and people being reactive to the new the headlines, and so moving into a safe haven asset. We also saw some of non-U.S. equity bank or non-U.S. banks diversifying their reserves into gold as well, but just giving some backdrop on that. We can go to the next slide now.
Hold up.
Looking at a little bit more detail now within U.S. equities, you know, we did see about a 2.7% return within the S&P 500. Returns were really supported by strong earnings as well as continued enthusiasm surrounding AI. However, I would say we did see a broadening out of market performance. At the top table, you can see that large cap value outperformed growth, and as well, small cap value outperformed small cap growth. And so not necessarily market returns being driven by those mega cap tech stocks. We saw more broadening out there over the quarter. And I would say that's also demonstrated by the sector performance that you're seeing at the bottom of the page here. You know, positive performance across different sectors, not necessarily just seeing strong returns coming out of information technology sector. On the next slide, this kind of shows, I think, another example of this broadening out, and I'll just direct you to this top table or chart here. So what this is showing is the Magnificent Seven stocks, and really what we saw over 2025 was only two of those Magnificent Seven stocks outperforming the broader benchmark. The SPX is essentially the S&P 500 ETF. And so that's really different than what we've been experienced before with the Magnificent Seven really driving returns. On the next slide, looking at, this is another theme that we were seeing within U.S. equities, specifically within small caps. So over this past year, what we were seeing is low quality factors really rallying. Essentially, low quality factors are those companies that are non-earners. And usually you wouldn't want your active managers necessarily investing in companies that have no cash flows. So what we saw over the quarter was it was very difficult for active managers to outperform the overall benchmark because these active managers aren't investing in those non-earners.
I would just add quickly, I think when you're looking at that chart on the upper right-hand side, the magnitude of the difference in results is very stark. So you look there in Q3, you see a 10% delta between non-earners and profitable companies. And so to Gwen's point, from an active management perspective, when you're looking at company fundamentals, when you're looking at balance sheets, a lot of these did not necessarily check the box. When we do look at performance a little bit later, you don't see that quite as much with Fidelity, because they do take some positions in some of those names to mitigate tracking error relative to the benchmark. But overall, it was a very difficult environment because of this dynamic. So the thing that always comes to mind is quantum computing. It's not yet a thing, but a lot of the quantum computing names did really, really well. They don't have a product per se. There's not actual quantum computing yet. It's a theory and an idea. Things like that did very, very well throughout the year, and it's just not the types of names that we saw most managers hold.
Okay, we can move on to the next slide now. Moving on to non-U.S. equity performance, as I mentioned before, we saw non-U.S. equities outperform U.S. equities. Within developed markets, one of the areas that we saw have strong performance over the quarter was the United Kingdom. That was really driven by the rally within metals. China, you can see negative 7.4% over the quarter there. That was just really due to disappointment regarding the governmental reform that they had promised previously. Over the year, the bottom chart on this slide, you can see emerging markets posted almost 34% return. That was really driven by semiconductors and positive wanting to invest in that space within emerging markets. Another factor that really contributed to non-U.S. equity performance was the fact that in the first half of the year, the U.S. dollar declined in value, and that's a tailwind for non-U.S. equities. We can move on to slide 9. Yes, okay. Looking at fixed income, you know, as I mentioned, we saw positive performance over the quarter and the last year, and that was really due to the fact that the Fed cut rates. I will mention that, as you can see, over the quarterly returns, the longer duration indexes didn't post positive performance, and that's just due to rates rising on the long end of the curve and the inverse relationship between rates and prices. And then we can move on to the next slide. On this slide here, we're kind of discussing the future of rate cuts. So as I previously mentioned, the Fed cut rates 3 times at the end of the year. And so now there's an expectation that they might take a more measured approach to fiscal policy. They do have, so more recently in January, the labor numbers came out and the number of jobs added was about 150,000 jobs. And so that's kind of a rebound that we're seeing there. I think it's going to be very data dependent on if we continue to see the number of jobs added go back to those regular numbers that we're used to seeing. And I think I want to point you to the chart at the bottom left on this slide. So this is essentially showing the projection of where Fed members expect rates to be in 2026. And the big takeaway here is there's not a lot of agreement about where rates will go. I think markets are pricing in about either 2 or 3 rate cuts. However, another component that's kind of adding to the uncertainty is the fact that we'll have a new Fed chair come this year. Next slide, please. Moving on to private real estate now. So overall, what we saw is early signs of a recovery within real estate. At the bottom of the page here, you can see that income was positive across regions and sectors. However, we are continuing to see appreciation within hotel and office still struggle. And then one other thing I want to mention is on the next slide. Thank you. Is looking at this redemption request chart on the top left. So what you can see is the redemption queue has dropped quite drastically from the highs that we've seen from 2023. And part of this has to do with, you know, investors actually withdrawing their redemption request, as well as an uptick in transactions that we've been seeing within real estate so that these funds can pay out the redemptions. So overall, you know, the economy looks pretty good. We did see a little bit of softening over the last quarter. However, markets continue to kind of drown out the noise, I would say, and posting really strong performance or returns over the last year. So, yeah, those are my comments, and I guess I'll pause for any questions before we move on to the next topic.
All right. Oh, actually, you know what? Sorry. There was one thing here that I did want to bring attention to. Our national conference is in Scottsdale this year. It's typically something that, you know, all of our clients are invited to. It's a fun, 3-day education, 2.5-day, I guess, educational session. We've got a lot of pretty interesting speakers that provide updates and thoughts on a whole wide range of topics. Last year, we had discussions on artificial intelligence. The owner of Starwood came in and spoke. We had somebody, a former Secret Service agent, come in and speak on personal interactions and things like that. So it's a really good, interesting educational session. It is open to all of you if anybody wants to attend. I believe Lisa and or Don probably has information, but you can see here, what is that, April 20th to the 22nd. So if anybody is interested, I think you can probably get it from Lisa. If not, feel free to reach out to Gwen or I directly, and we can get you the information on the conference. All right. So with that, I'm going to go to the eye chart. I'm sure everybody can see this very, very well. So this just takes a look at the asset allocation as of the end of the year. You can see here, plan is still chugging along at over $1 billion, $1.1 billion in terms of total assets. You see in that middle column, we did, you know, as the reminder, we did fund both Harrison Street and Principal, the two new real estate managers. That is half of their total committed amount, but because we have an unknown timing on the redemptions from the two JP Morgan portfolios, we're trying to meter that out. So you do stay in line with asset allocation, which is up above. So you can see your target to real estate here is 12%. You're at about 11, just over 11 right now. So much more back in line once those contributions were made, which is what the intent of that was. You see here slightly underweight to fixed income relative to target. Everything is still within investment guidelines though. And a lot of that differential in market value really has to do with the fact that we've seen greater performance from equity than we have seen from fixed income. But fund staff does a really good job of taking money where they need to, as, you know, benefits and whatnot, because you saw on the next page, you do see negative cash flow for the quarter. And so things generally stay very, very close to target, but definitely within the policy ranges that you all have out. So what you really want to know, what were the results? So portfolio added 2.9% for the last quarter. You can see there 16.5% for the last year. I would like to I would like to pretend that Callan could take full credit for the results, but honestly, markets have been really good. So it's been it's been a good period for the pension trust. You know, that said, you can see over the last year, the portfolio net of fees outperformed by about 80 basis points. You can see about 40 basis points over that three-year period. Slight hiccup over five, but you can see about 30 basis points of outperformance over a 10-year period. So results have continued to look really very strong for you all. So I'll hop up here to take a look at numbers. At the end of the day, it's nice when there's not a lot to talk about. We already talked about Champlain, so I'm not gonna bother covering that in these comments. I will make a quick comment on the T. Rowe Price, actually a couple of quick comments on T. Rowe Price. So you see there some of that track record looking kind of right at or, you know, slightly below that benchmark. They've been caught up in the AI theme or the fact that they've been somewhat underexposed to some of those factors. So selection there has been a challenge for them. No significant concerns on that front. We did want to bring to your attention that lead portfolio manager, Tamor Tamadin, is going to be leaving the firm within the next – I should have written this down. I would say it's within the next month or two. He's doing it for personal reasons. He is going to be taking some time off before joining a former colleague as kind of a part-time analyst, in a venture that he is running. John Fryer, who was made associate PM on this strategy back in 2023, has been a long-term, T. Rowe Price, employee, is going to be taking over lead portfolio manager responsibilities. And so that change is going to be made relatively shortly. We did have the chance to meet with Tamor on this, and he was very clear that the timing is not ideal because T. Rowe Price has historically been very good about providing notice for any type of management turnovers. They typically give you 12 to 18 months So only getting about 3 months is relatively unusual. But Tamor was very clear that it is solely due to personal reasons. It is his choice. He is not going anywhere immediately, so he's not taking another role. And when he does get back into things, it's going to be more of a part-time consultant than it is going to be full-time portfolio management. And so, you know, we've got conviction. We feel good about John, but it is something we are keeping an eye on. So there's no decision that you all need to make on it today, but we did want you to be aware of that change because it is a relatively big deal when a lead PM comes off. Yep.
Craig, I just had a comment on that. I hadn't read in that report that update. And I think you guys had mentioned, too, that another important context is that T. Rowe Price has grown a lot, or that they have a high volume right now, too. Like their fund is a high volume fund, too. Can you speak to that a little bit? Is that, like in terms of their assets under management, and does that affect their strategy much at the size that they're at?
I mean, it's a large cap equity, large cap growth equity strategy. So you're trading in the biggest, most liquid names there are out there. So no, it shouldn't have a significant impact on,
okay.
on anything. For that. So the other tier of price comment I wanted to make is I know we owed you guidelines for this meeting. You may have noticed the omission of those from your packets. When we went back to T. Rowe with the questions that you all had from the last meeting, it precipitated a number of discussions, quite a bit of back and forth. And we didn't get finalized language until like yesterday, maybe the day before. And so instead of getting that to you all late and not having a chance to look at that, you know, we opted to defer that to a later meeting so you could review it. You know, all that said, the change to the guideline that they're ultimately requesting is basically being able to have up to 10% more than whatever is held in the index, regardless of weight or anything like that. So if the benchmark is weighted at 55%, they can hold up to 65. If the benchmark then were to go down to 52, their max would be 62. So the idea was to simplify it while still giving them the flexibility that they needed. It should address that issue that they had where they bought one day, the benchmark went down, and then they had that 50% rule kick in. So I was not intending to discuss it a lot today, but just want you to know that we do have a red line for you that we will provide, but we didn't want to confuse things ahead of the meeting since it came in so late. So, you know, I normally do like to point out some managers that are doing very well. You know, we've seen a pretty sharp recovery over the last year from American Century, and then Causeway has continued to have pretty stellar performance due to underlying selection. And then, you know, I did mention earlier that Fidelity product, the FIM product right there in the middle, you see a pretty good quarter. They have had somewhat of a challenging last couple of years, you know, and like I said, while they do have some exposure to the low quality names because they do have tracking error metrics in their product, they are still relatively underexposed to low quality versus the benchmark. And so that has been somewhat of a headwind, but they've managed to mitigate it a little bit because they still do own some of those names. So, you know, we can talk about the underlying managers, but that's why I start at the bottom because I do think it's important. You do have total fund objectives. As a quick reminder, your assumed rate of return is 6.75. You handily outpace that over the last year, the last 3 years. You're very, very close over 5. And so really your objective is to make sure you're hitting that over time, because that is what ultimately pays benefits over time and how things are accruing by the actuary. So, you know, strong results, both absolute and relative, really across the board for the portfolio. The last couple of slides that I wanted to talk about were just pictorially to look at some of the results a little bit differently. And I think the cumulative returns over time, you know, certainly active management oftentimes gets a bad rap. You know, you can see here, though, active management for you all has added value. you know, really, I would say relatively consistently over time. And you can see there that the fund dollar value is higher than it would have been otherwise if you were just passively invested across the board. And then the last piece that I wanted to look at was your portfolio relative to our public fund universe. The numbers look really good. Honestly, like if you look at it, they're almost off the charts across a lot of the periods. You know, some of that has to do with the asset allocation. So you can see here, adjusted for asset allocation, your fund, you know, ranks slightly lower. So the fund is positioned slightly more aggressively than we, you know, sometimes see, but very, very good relative returns to your peers. So with that, it'll conclude my comments, but I'm happy to take any questions on this.
Questions, comments?
I just have a question. Thank you. Craig, you mentioned those webinars and a conference. You know, for the webinars, I am not on any emails or anything like that. I remember Lisa received a webinar email once for a training, but is that available to the board members, or is that just we're supposed to go look for that information? Or it would be nice to, you know, to be on the in the loop with those things, because I, as you know, this is just a continued, you know, continued effort to keep current with this all of this information that our own TSRS plan.
Yeah, so we can certainly set you up to receive emails and updates on these types of things.
I mean, we'll coordinate that through Lisa.
I'm sorry, what, Mark?
Coordinate that through Lisa, please.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anything else?
That was all. Right. That was all on performance. We got a lot left, unfortunately, for you.
The train. Are you? Did I interrupt your?
I'm done on performance, but I think we're the next. We've got capital markets and fee analysis left.
Hang on one second. The agenda went away. Bear with me for one second. The asset allocation update and the fee analysis still to go.
Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry. Good. Keep going.
You're good. We appreciate you all bearing with us on this. We got a lot today. So asset allocation, this is something that we run every year. It's really 3 to 5 years we do an asset liability study. So look at how we can better marry the assets to the liabilities to help, you know, continue to close that funding gap. It also helps inform a little bit more directly, you know, whether or not you should be hedging any differently or the like. Your plan certainly works differently than a corporate plan because you have the assumed rate of return versus being tied to a specific yield curve. But the asset liability study is certainly very helpful to make sure things aren't getting too far out of line with what your asset experience is going to look like relative to what the liability experience is going to be. So for capital market projections this year, we have it's a relatively large deck. I'm only going to go through a few pages of it. Suffice it to say, there were not a lot of changes in our assumptions between 2025 and 2026. In fact, when you look down, I think we only changed three or four of the return assumptions. Our risk metrics were tweaked slightly. But based on the way we build our assumptions, which is pretty consistent over time, they're 10-year forward looking based upon how I would say similar, the year ended to sort of how it began. last year, obviously interest rates went down. You know, we had a very good stock market, but in terms of, you know, broad economy earnings, things like that, we didn't feel like there was a change necessitated for big changes in our assumptions. So you see here, not a lot of changes, from that end. You know, certainly looking at the numbers, these are all the risk return, metrics for, the different asset classes. And the other thing that's obviously important is correlation. So how the different asset classes interact with each other. Those were tweaked slightly, as well. What did that actually mean for you all? Nothing. You're project because the returns didn't really change, the modeling looked the exact same this year as it did last year. So your expected return risk ticked up slightly, but not meaningful numbers. So it kept your Sharpe ratio the same. It kept the projected outcomes on the current asset allocation relatively similar. And you know, I think the important thing to note is the likelihood of not returning, of returning more than zero is very, very high over most of the time frame here. And then the probability of achieving that 6 3/4 is over 50%, which is very good for most of the modeling that we tend to see. What does this look like from a risk perspective? You know, you see that total volatility of 11.8%. The vast majority of it, really all of it, comes from your equity portfolio. The other asset classes act as mitigators. So things like real estate, infrastructure, are not directly correlated to to equity or fixed income. So those help bring down that risk level. So at the end of the day, your equity strategies are contributing really mostly towards your volatility. One of the things that we had talked about in January was whether or not we tweak the underlying asset mix for large cap equity. You know, at that time, you know, I said that it would be a little bit more bang for your buck to look at changing fixed income allocation versus just tweaking growth and value. So what these mixes look at is if you add 5%, 10%, or 15% to fixed income. You know, you can see how that grows. We source it. It's generally sourced from equity across the board. So you can see the impact across the scenarios if you were to make a decision to change. You know, so as reference, and you know, as I'm presenting this, I realize we probably should have had the current allocation on here so you could see it side by side. But the current allocation, 7.1% return, 11.8 volatility. So what you see, because you move money to fixed income, the trade-off, lower return, but also less volatility associated with that. So, you know, based on the projections for right now, even if you add, you know, you move 10% from equities to fixed income, you're still above that, you know, your current assumed rate of return at, or right at that 6 3/4. What does that look like? From the range of outcomes, you know, because of the lower volatility that you see with fixed income, it shrinks the range of outcomes. So it doesn't make them more certain necessarily, but it just shrinks the range. What you do see though is the more fixed income you have, the lower the probability of hitting the 6 3/4. They're not huge changes in probability necessarily, but it does lower them, because our expected return on fixed income is below that 6 3/4 bogey. So we're not making a specific recommendation. We wanted to put these in front of you because we thought it would be informative and, you know, interesting to see, maybe help some of you frame your thought on if there were other things you wanted to look at or if you did want to make a change. But we are comfortable with the current allocation, but we thought these were illustrative and helpful based on the last discussion we had.
Yeah, this is Mr. Chair, is it okay if I comment real quick on this?
Yeah,
this is great. I was actually going to potentially ask for something like this, where
I'd be interested to see in Callan's perspective, like maybe a couple different scenarios where you have two or three different ways of getting a little bit more defensive without, you know, shifting too much, which these are, you know, three different ways you can get more defensive, if you will. And maybe one where you look at getting even more aggressive, I don't know. But like, to me, for what it's worth, like, I think we should really look at the +5 or +10%, and consider getting in a slightly more defensive, position. I know we really don't want to play the market timing game, you know, that's not, as a board, that's not really what we're trying to do. But at the same time, like, I would like to see some of that defensiveness. I think there's justification for getting a little bit more defensive. That's all.
Okay, any other comments or questions? All right, your last topic, Greg.
Yeah, so maybe real quick before we close that, is there anything else you all would like to see from us at this point on this further, just so I'm clear on what our marching orders are?
I mean, I don't want to speak for the whole board, but this, so please keep me in line or anyone else chip in on this. The changing to fixed income is one approach. Are there any other approaches that could have similar or different risk profiles? I'm kind of trying to understand at the portfolio level of different ways we could do it. But would this be the kind of easiest and most preferred way in Callan's perspective? And are there others?
I think I would say this is really the path of least resistance based on how the portfolio is structured now. You know, without running the specific modeling and seeing what it would look like, you know, certainly, you know, potentially the introduction of different asset classes could get you to similar results on this. So, you know, things like maybe private credit, maybe hedge funds, something that it could get you there. Without looking at the modeling, I don't want to definitively say, you know, certainly things like that add additional complications to the portfolio, but based on existing asset class and structure, this is the easiest way to go.
And we've had pretty good performance with our fixed income people as well.
Yeah, especially that PIMCO diversified strategy. It's been really good.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's work on it from that angle to the extent that we're looking at going deeper on this. This is well beyond the discussion at 10:08 in the morning. And I do want to remind everybody that, you know, from everything you hear and read, the city is headed toward some financial challenges, at least in the next few years, and that doesn't mean defensive strategies are bad, but the days of 27% funding, maybe in our mirror, at least for some time. We can't assume the world's going to stay the same way. With that, Keith.
Okay, I'm going to go over the fee study that we did over this last end of the year. So there's a lot of information on this slide and over the table, so I'll just kind of run through what we're looking at here. Essentially, the process is that we reached out to each of your investment managers to get the fee, and we put it in this table. So on the column, the investment manager, those are the managers within your lineup. The mandate column is the mandate of each of those investment managers. Then you have the vehicle, the market value as of 12/31/2025, and then each of those management fees. The peer group median fee is essentially each of these investment managers are compared against a peer group. And so that's the median fee of that peer group. And then the last two columns here are looking at the 90th to 10th percentile range of that peer group. So essentially think low end of the peer group and high end fees of that peer group. So a range. Blue text essentially means that the investment management fee is above the peer group median. So I'm just going to run through some of the blue text managers here. Looking at Alliance S&P Index, you're seeing an investment management fee of 4 basis points compared to the peer group median of 2 basis points. However, this is still within the peer group range, so we feel comfortable with that fee. With Champlain Midcap, so the investment management fee is 85 basis points compared to the peer group median of 68 basis points. And then as you can see here, as previously mentioned, this is outside the range that we see within that peer group. So as previously discussed, high fees and also considering some of the performance issues that we've seen, just something to keep in mind. Looking at the BlackRock U.S. Debt Fund, the investment management fee is 6 basis points compared to the peer group median of 4 basis points. However, that's still within the peer group range, so no concerns there. The PIMCO Fixed Income Fund has an investment management fee of 49 basis points compared to the peer group median of 30 basis points, and it is outside of that peer group range. However, as we previously mentioned, the PIMCO fixed income performance has been really strong. So, you know, sometimes when you do see a little bit of higher fees and then there's strong performance, you're paying for kind of what you get. You can kind of think about it that way. So no concerns there.
Yeah, and I think I would add on the PIMCO fund as well. It is really a multi-sector portfolio the way it's designed. So it's a little bit apples and oranges in terms of the peer group. But given the net of fee outperformance that we've seen, a fee like this is something that we're comfortable with.
And weren't they like at the top of their peer ranking or something like that too on the different sheet? I don't know. They seem to be doing really well in their cohort.
Yeah, they do. Give me just a second. I can get that pulled back up. So. Yeah, I mean, you can look at the numbers. I mean, if you just look at the numbers here, you can see over 10 years, they're almost a full percent ahead. And actually, I don't know the peer pages offhand, so I'm not going to search for this right now.
They were one on the peer page.
Yeah, they've done a really good job. So.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the JP Morgan Strategic Property Fund now, we're seeing an investment management fee of 97 basis points compared to the peer group median and 95 basis points. So really close to the peer group median and within the range. So no concerns there.
Yeah,
Harrison, go ahead.
On this fund, I do want to touch on the footnote really quickly. You all are still taking advantage of the fee discount program, which JP Morgan extended from the end of last year to June of this year. So that discount is, my mind just blanked, 30%, on their otherwise stated fees. So.
Harrison Street Core Property Fund, we're seeing an annual investment management fee of 1.13% compared to the peer median group of 95 basis points. So a little bit higher on the peer group range. However, this fund invests in specialized real estate options. So kind of paying for realization there, really no concerns. And then the Principal Real Estate Core Property Fund, we're seeing an annual investment management fee of 1.02% compared to the peer group median of 95 basis points. And just to give a little bit more context, you know, this is on a tiered fee schedule. So as market value increases, we will see the investment management fee come down. So looking at the overall picture now, we take a weighted average of these fees, and you can see that the total investment management fee for the fund is 50, or for the plan is 50 basis points compared to the peer group median of 59 basis points, which is about, in dollar value terms, $900,000. And then one last thing I want to mention is, when we were reaching out to managers, BlackRock actually, proposed reduced fees for both of their funds in the plan. So the current fee for the Russell 1000 Value Index is 4 basis points, and they're proposing a new fee of 3.5 basis points. And then for the U.S. Debt Index, the current fee is 5.5 basis points, and they're proposing a reduced fee of 3 basis points, which would approximately be about an additional $10,000 of savings.
So we think, a pretty good story from our end. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a little bit of paperwork to get those fee reductions in place with BlackRock, but a good story overall on our end. Certainly happy to take questions if you all have any.
That was a great table. Thank you. That was good.
And maybe just for everybody's notice, we did realize a mistake in what we had sent over. It didn't impact any of the numbers. So we had provided an updated copy late last night for you all for the records on that. We had added an extra line. So.
All right. Any additional questions or comments?
All right. Craig, who would that updated copy come from? Would it come from you or Lisa?
We sent it to Lisa and Dawn late last night, and so we can send it to the board unless they want to forward it on to y'all.
Thanks.
Craig, Dawn will send it this afternoon.
I'm sorry, what?
Dawn will resend it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you both very much. Excellent presentation.
I feel like we've been talking for a long time, but are there any other topics? Is there anything else that we can answer or address for you all right now?
I think so, but if anybody disagrees, speak up.
Great.
Okay. All right. And you all can stick around if you want to, but feel free to move on to other things if that's how your day sits. Lisa, the last item on the agenda is the candidate approval. Is that something you're prepared to speak about?
Yes. And we've provided the board the policies and the rules for the nominations and the election process, and we've also provided those that have expressed interest in running for the board for the one spot that's available for the active employee position. And so we've provided those. There's 5 of them, so we've gotten some pretty big we got great interest, which is fantastic. And so we're just here to make sure that if there is any issues with any of them, do we want to go one by one to approve each potential candidate? Is there any...
Here's what I suggest. I want to find out. Well, Kimberly, you've got your hand up. So, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to, since I'm a candidate myself, I was going to recuse myself from discussion on any of the candidates, or I just don't feel comfortable. I had one comment, but I guess I can hold off on that. Not related to any of the candidates. I can hold off on that till the next meeting.
Let's get this done, and then if you want to bring up your comment.
Okay, thank you. Just going through listening to this, and especially the T. Rowe, when we were talking about T. Rowe Price and, you know, the conversations from the last meeting, making sure that because they had that portfolio, the deviation and holdings, I don't know. I was just thinking as a board, like maybe on the agenda somehow, I'm not sure what's the best way to present it, but anything that requires follow-up or more of, you know, our commitment to make sure that we stated in a past board meeting that we would follow up on the matter, I don't know, maybe make a list so we never have any issue that we are not addressing something that needs to be addressed. In my mind right now, we have the T. Rowe Price portfolio deviation. Based on this board meeting, we had the fee reduction that seemed to, like they're going to, Craig's are going to go look into that, but it's our responsibility. I mean, we're the oversight, so even though Craig is going to do it, we are going to make sure that we do get this fee reduction. And then, like a while ago, not that it's, I consider it, you know, pressing, but it is a pressing matter. Well, it is a matter of concern for the city is that climate action adoption plan. We had committed to, you know, having some discussion that we put off at a later date, but anything that's more than just a liking or, I mean, that's, we're required to, you know, review it. And things like the T. Rowe Price and the fee reduction where we stated that we would, you know, definitely move forward. Just to make, I mean, I have my list, but I'm thinking, you know, for the board, I mean, there could be others. I just want to make sure we're never missing anything.
I'm sorry, this one wasn't clear. We're totally off the topic that's on the agenda. I suggested bringing this up after. I want to get this done. See, we've already lost one board member, and so it's not a TV election thing. Forgive me for interrupting. We should show that Kimberly is accused from the issue that's before the board. Thanks. Let me ask the board members who are still here. Does anybody have any observations about any candidates that suggest that they should not be on the ballot? If not, I think we can handle this very quickly and easily. I don't see any need to go through and discuss each person, particularly when we have one of those people in the room. But if there are people who have an issue with somebody, let me know and we'll handle the voting differently. I haven't heard anybody, so does that seem? Angel?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. While I do not have issue with any of the applicants on the roster, I see some procurement staff requesting to be considered. And we should be looking at individuals who have some kind of financial background, whether it is accounting, and that's just me. I don't know what the preference is of the other members of the board. Accounting, finance, something in that area that would help bring more perspective additional perspective to the board as that we move to finance.
So are you suggesting that there are people on the list who should not be potential board members?
I don't know. I want to outrightly put it that way, but I know there are people who have requested who do not have finance background.
Cassie, can you give us some insights here? I find it very odd that the board decides who can run to be on the board. That's just me.
I think you're muted.
You're on mute. You're on mute.
Thank you. Just for background perspective, the board has discussed candidate qualifications over the years, and for this position, the qualification is to be an active contributing member. And it does not require any specialized or specific background. And I think it's important that the board respect the parameters that are in the code and the board rules. In the past, you have had board members who had no financial background, you know, came from various departments across the city. And although those members may face a more a steeper learning curve, they have ultimately grown into being very valuable board members. So I think that I read through all of the candidate submissions. I think they're all acceptable from my technical perspective. And we could in the future revisit fine-tuning the requirements for these board seats, but we don't have any particular background requirements now.
Okay. I appreciate that. What I'd like to do, and we hope, John left, correct?
Yes, he did.
And so if Kimberly recuses, how many board members do we have who are voting?
We still have four.
We have four. Okay, and that's a quorum. All right. So what I'd like to do is have a motion to approve the candidate applicants who appear on the ballot. Have I said that right, Cassie?
Yes.
Yeah. Close enough. Okay. Will somebody make that motion, please?
So move.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Let's tell them to vote then. And,
okay.
Get this issue resolved.
Okay. Mark Rubin?
Aye.
John O'Hare is absent. Oh, what happened to my list? I'm sorry. That's weird. Kimberly Swanberg is recused herself. Tarleton Farron.
Aye.
Dave Samer.
Aye.
Terry Train is absent. And Angel Ozamalam.
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes. All right. Kimberly raised a good point that we have, that we be sure we're following up on items that come up during the meeting. Is that, have I summarized what you were saying?
Yes.
Okay. So here's what I would suggest. You, and I appreciate your attention to those items because it is easy to leave a meeting and get back to things. Can you send the list to Lisa? Lisa, would you circulate that? Or really, if you can, just do a reply all to the material that you got, so you have everybody's names. If anybody sees any other issues, please add them to the list, and then going forward, we'll make sure at the end of each meeting we are recapping anything that came up to be sure that it's added to the list going forward so that we do get things revisited and dealt with. Okay?
Sure.
That's a good procedure. Okay with everybody? All right. All right. Do we have any additional future agenda items that go beyond things that we've already brought up? Okay. I think we're at that point where we have a motion to adjourn. Do we hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you. So second.
I second.
Right. Would you please call the vote?
Mark Rubin. John O'Hare is absent. Kimberly Swanberg.
Aye.
Tarleton Farron.
Aye.
Dave Samer.
Aye.
Terry Train is absent. Angel Ozamalam.
Aye.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We will meet again next month. Take care.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Turn it off.
Yeah, it's not going to close until I go back to my desk.